All right. So what's it like to be an LAPD officer? I've emceed stuff with the LAPD, and I saw this great group called ABLE, the Association of Black Enforcement Executives. And I saw so many neat stories coming out of that, that some of the people that are at that luncheon are here with me today. So welcome to the podcast, Olympic and Bundy. Okay, so I'm going to let you all introduce yourselves, and then we'll go from there. All right, my friend Aaron, who was at the luncheon for ABLE, go ahead.
Okay, hi. I am Captain Aaron McCraney, and I work for LAPD out of the Recruitment and Employment Division.
And we have talked about some of your efforts to get more people into the LAPD. You
Absolutely.
Had a recruitment training event we talked about.
Yes, yes. It's something that we work very hard at. We are hiring. We are hiring on a daily basis. You know, we are hiring probably about 600 officers a year.
Wow.
Yeah, we hire probably.
I had no idea.
Yeah, more. We hire more than most agencies have on their department. So.
And how many LAPD officers do we have in our city right now?
Approximately 10,033.
Okay, very good. All right, our next guest.
Hi, I'm Senior Lead Officer Roseanne Adams, and I also work with Captain McCraney at LAPD Recruitment and Employment Division.
And how long have you been on the job?
14 years now.
14. Wow. Are you from L.A.?
I am. Well,
high school?
Ish. East of L.A. Yeah.
Okay.
El Monte.
Oh, okay. You know, so the greater L.A.
Greater L.A., yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, and Captain McCraney, are you also from L.A.?
I am from Los Angeles. I am from the city.
Wow.
I'm from what's known as the Crenshaw District. That's where I
love the Crenshaw District. My assistant's in the Crenshaw District, so I'm there quite often. Okay. My next guest.
Hi. My name is Sergeant Cassandra Britt Nickerson. I have approximately 29 years on the job. And I...
How many?
29 years.
Wow, you wear it well.
Thank you.
Okay, 29.
Yes.
All right.
And I grew up in the city of Los Angeles, born and raised, went to all the city schools, Woodcrest Elementary, Bret Hart Junior High, and Washington High School.
Where's Washington High?
Right there off of Dinker and, what is that? Dinker and,
What neighborhood is that?
That's South L.A.
South L.A. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. I love that you all are local. That's fantastic. So you know the history of the LAPD, the issues with the LAPD, the controversies, the concerns, and the job itself. All right. And also joining us a little bit later, two more guests that you're going to love to hear about the mentoring program as we bring our young people along as well. So I love that. Thanks for coming on to Olympic and Bundy, my home away from home. Captain McCraney, start me out here. Why did you want to be an officer and how old were you when you knew that?
So it's something that I always thought about, you know, as a kid. I, you know, highly respected the police. I, you know, as many people, grew up seeing many of the television shows that dealt with LAPD, be it Adam 12 or SWAT or, you know, so on and so forth. I can recall being in elementary school, having LAPD come into the school and, you know, giving us a talk, giving us a presentation. So it's something that, you know, for a long time I thought about doing. Actually, when I got to an adult, I actually started in a different career. I started in banking. But I recall.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a turn.
It is. Well, but we recruit. We come from all aspects of life.
Wait, you were already working. You kind of had
yes.
a career
yeah,
going.
Yeah, I was going. Like, I was moving.
But you'd applied for the LAPD.
Had not. I was moving forward and doing my thing there. And I had a friend of mine who was a police officer at the time, and he would come in there, and I would be so proud when he came in his uniform and would be able to.
So how old were you now?
Oh, I'm in my 20s.
Okay.
I'm in my 20s at this time. And he came in, and, you know, I was very proud to let people know this is my friend. This is somebody I grew up with, and look at him. He's a police officer now.
Yeah.
And so out of that, you know, it kind of stirred me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the company that I was working for, I was working in the banking industry. That bank ended up going through a merger with another bank, and it was decision time for me. Did I want to go with this new bank, or did I want to go all the way different opportunity and pursue police work?
Banking to the LAPD. I have a good friend who was a businessman and got the call like he was 30 years old to join the Long Beach Police Department. And his fiance at the time was like, wait, I thought I was marrying a businessman. And now he's a longtime Long Beach PD. All right, Sergeant, how about yourself?
Well, personally, I didn't always want to be a police officer. I went to UC Davis, came home. I was working in banking as well. And
wait, what is it with banking?
I don't know. I looked around.
The stepping stones to law enforcement?
Yeah, I looked around. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this the rest of my life. And I happened to see a advertisement that they had all these fabulous jobs within the LAPD. And I thought that seemed pretty cool. You know, but like
it
any.
It just seems so different from banking.
Right. It was. It was. But it was like. They had all these jobs, and it's like, you could do all these things. And they had this really cool campaign going, and I thought, hey, I want to try that. And I remember telling my mom, who loved the police but didn't want her daughter to be a police,
wait a minute here.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I think I want to take the test. They have all these schools. She's like, oh, you have lost your mind.
Right.
You know, and then, right. You know, not my baby, you know. And so, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I held off. And then once again, that campaign came up again. I saw the big commercial and the big job fair seminar. And I said, you know what? I'm going for it.
I'm just surprised that the same mindset of somebody who would get into banking would also have the same interest as law enforcement.
Yeah. Yeah, it was totally. Well, you know what? The funny thing is I remember when I was in banking, I was young. I was like in my 20s. It was my first little job. And I just looked around and everyone just seemed so old at that time. Well, old now is I'm that old person.
Okay. But and you know, when we talk to our youngster DJ, enjoy those years in high school and college, because when you get out, I felt the same way working in news. Everyone's so old.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Right.
And so I looked around in banking and I'm like, I don't know if this is for me. And yeah. And I've always been a daredevil. Like I ride motorcycles. You know, I'm very
my
adventurous.
My kind of girl.
Right? And so it just seemed like that was adventurous. Like I wanted to do that. Plus, you know, get Christy Love back in the day, you know, with the fur
yes.
coat. You know, I thought I would have the little gun. I thought the uniform was cute. So I thought okay. I'd try it. There you go.
Okay, so people may or may not know my history with riding bikes as well.
Okay.
I rode with a cop club called the Choir Boys.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you know them, but they were a bike club. And we hooked up with the Tijuana PD. We rode, like 300 of us rode down to Tijuana, hooked up with those officers, hung out in Tijuana, and another news anchor and I were both emceeing this event down there. We both, the next day, literally went out and bought Harleys.
Oh, wow.
Literally went out wow. and bought Harleys.
Okay, see? Yeah. See, yeah. I have a fat boy.
Okay.
Yes, and I have a Ducati.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Okay, see, now for myself, I did learn to ride, then I was really... riding on the freeway one day, I looked down and realized, I'm going to kill myself.
Exactly.
I wasn't trained in it. I wasn't a daredevil like yourself. So I'm now a passenger.
Okay.
Now a passenger.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Officer, what's your background?
Okay. So I have no banking experience.
No banking.
And wait, how's your credit though?
Excellent.
Because I'm thinking people listening are thinking, I have to be in banking first?
Yeah. No, absolutely not. And, you know, I grew up in a traditional Vietnamese household. So law enforcement was definitely not in the picture. I think my parents actually gave me two options. They said, hey, you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer. So I kind of geared my path towards becoming a doctor, you know. So I went to school, went to UCI, majored in science. Come to find out, not so good in science. academic probation and realized, hey, I think I got to switch careers. So
wow.
I switched my major over to criminology because I actually was passing that class. So then, you know, I graduated. I interned at different law offices and did all that stuff. And I just thought, gosh, that's so boring. I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to study and go to law school and any of that stuff. Because like Sergeant Nickerson, I'm active, you know, I'm super hyper. So I graduated and found myself working at the mall. So not my parents.
I worked at the mall, too.
Yes. Yeah, not my parents' proudest moment, but there I was, and I fell into loss prevention. So I was catching, you know, I was working.
Security.
Security, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So I was catching shoplifters, be it that they were 70 years old and so, but
oh,
you
no.
know what? I thought it was pretty cool. I thought
I could do this.
Yes. I thought, hey, I could be doing this for a way lot more money. So I thought, hey, why not LAPD, you know? So called up my friend who was actually on the job and was like, hey, you think I can do it? I mean, you know me. You've grown up with me. And he's like, absolutely. Come to find out, he was going to get a $500 referral fee if I got on the job. So, you know what?
There was $500. Uh-huh. He had incentive.
he set me up. But a year and a half later, after applying, I got on the job. And 14 years later, here I am.
So are your parents first generation to this country?
Yes, they are.
Okay. My family took in foster kids from Vietnam.
Aww.
So refugee children. So I have great affection for the Aww. Story of the Vietnamese people in our country.
Thank you.
Yeah. So mom and dad proud now?
Absolutely. Well, you know, paying their bills. So, yeah, they can't be too disappointed now.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Okay. So you now are entrenched on the job trying to recruit others. What do you tell them about what you like about the LAPD, Captain?
Well, one thing that I tell people is that whatever you do, whatever you love outside of the police department, there's a way to do it on the police department.
Such as?
Well, I mean, I've done many, many things. First of all, I've traveled. This department has sent me outside of the country, has sent me all across the nation.
Like where?
I've been to Korea. Wow. I've been to New York, been to Florida. I mean, Colorado. They've sent me all around. But in addition to that, I started and operated a youth center in the Rampart area. I partnered with Jack LaLanne, and we created
Jack LaLanne, the fitness guy?
Him, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so I partnered with him, and we started the Rampart Jack LaLanne Youth Center.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, it's just amazing of the opportunities and things that we can do.
I didn't even envision the travel as well. So we're training other departments or working with other departments?
Well, there are different things. There's training. There are conferences. I've gone to other police agencies and participated in their hiring process, you know, to help them to get people to promote on the job. So, yeah.
So I'll go around the circle here. Where did you all start? What was your first kind of assignment?
Well, everyone starts at the same.
Patrol.
No matter what. Yeah, everyone has to go through a process. So once you get hired, everyone goes through the police academy, which is 6 months. And then after the police academy, you have to work a patrol division, which is a part of your 18-month probation. So you go out to patrol for 1 year. Now, after you do that period and you pass your probation, you are eligible to pursue other assignments. And then that's where they can probably tell you some other things that they've done from that point.
Okay. Officer, where'd you start? So you get through probation.
Right. So I did my probation in Hollenbeck, which is in the East LA.
Love Hollenbeck. Yes.
Absolutely. And then I went over to North Hollywood for a little bit. And then I've worked at specialized units, crime suppression units, and by teams. So, yeah.
Okay. And where are you now?
I'm at recruitment.
Is that headquarters?
It's...
We're based out of the personnel building. We have a space in headquarters, but the majority of our work, because we do a lot of backgrounds and we work in partnership with personnel department, we are primarily in the personnel building.
And where is that?
That's in 700 East Temple in Los Angeles.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
Downtown.
Downtown. Okay, so you're downtown now. Okay, and then we got all your duties in?
Yes.
Okay. All right, and Sergeant?
Yeah, you know, all those things that I thought I could do, I did. So coming on, I had the opportunity to work vice, you know, undercover vice, prostitution detail, you know, the trick task force stuff you see on TV. So I always thought, oh, this is the coolest thing ever, right? I just didn't want my friends to see me on the corner. But anyway.
Like, what,
right?
Is that her from high school?
Her, right? Right? But go to those clubs, those after-hour spots, all those things. It was just so exciting for me. And then I had the opportunity to become a detective. So I became a detective. I worked the tables, whether it be burglary or then I went to anti-terrorist division, did a little stint there, take home car, following leads, and so it was very interesting assignments. I also worked juvenile narcotics, undercover buy. We actually did have a program like 21 Jump Street, had kids in school and, you know, handlers, and so it really did go down exactly like that. So
you were in high school?
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
And so those were interesting times. So, you know, it was just always exciting. I should say, pinch me. I can't believe I'm getting paid to do this. Like, it was just always amazing to me. So all those things that you dreamed about or thought about, like, you know, I got a chance to do them. And so made sergeant, went to Rampart, came out of Rampart, worked there, and then bounced around a couple more assignments, and then ended up back in recruitment as a sergeant. And so I've been here ever since, and I actually was a recruiter in my younger years as well. And so, but this is an amazing assignment because you get an opportunity to, you know, get people on the job and get them hired, and just it's rewarding to see people fulfill their dreams.
So because this podcast is meant to be uplifting, we're not going to tackle too much of the in-depth stuff about some of the issues that come up with law enforcement / LAPD. But I do want to note that two of you have worked Rampart, and there has been a history with Rampart. And I'm wondering how you felt about going into that station and what kind of changes you wanted to make or what kind of influence you wanted to have on Rampart.
Well, you know, the crazy thing was, I remember when I made sergeant, and so I was a detective, and then I made the list, and then they said, you're going to Rampart. Well, I'm like, why would they send me to Rampart, right? I didn't put in the goal
there.
Because
you didn't get to pick.
No, I didn't get to pick. And so they sent me to Rampart. Me and five new sergeants went into Rampart. It was just kind of strange. And then a week later, the whole scandal broke. The news came out.
So you were there.
It was deliberate. So they sent us in there to change the whole staff. But we didn't know that was coming. We were just sent to Rampart. And it, to be honest, it was a very trying time, you know, being sent to a division where this incident had happened. And now you are taking that brunt where you really wasn't there when it was all beginning. And so just being in the division where it just was trying. A lot of, it was a downtime for us at that time. And a lot of officers, felt bad about that and just coming to work and that morale and people feeling bad. But, to be honest, the majority of the officers are there to do what's right. And it's unfortunately when we have those couple of bad apples and it can taint us. And it is what it is. But, just getting out there, just trying to make a difference, trying to change that attitude, that outlook about our department.
So I don't have my history book right in front of me or necessarily a computer, so I can't give you the facts and figures of the Rampart. But it was called the Rampart Scandal,
yes.
Perhaps by the media. And there were some officers that were arrested?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'll let our viewers, listeners, if they want to go ahead and Google that, they can. But I'm talking to you, Captain, also. You also were at Rampart. How did you feel about being there, and how do you feel about it today?
So when I was at Rampart, I was there before it happened. And I guess... So I was there as a senior lead officer. So as a senior officer, you kind of work on your own. You kind of do your own thing. So I wasn't really aware of things that were going on. And I don't know that many people were aware. Like, you were either on the in or on the out. And as she mentioned, I think it was, a very small, select group of people that were involved in this. But I don't think it was something that was well known or widely known or thought about.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I wanted to kind of just sum up one thing. I had done a little bit of training with law enforcement. I had emceed the Baker to Vegas run, so I knew a lot of officers. One of my best friends is Santa Monica, retired. And I went to do a little training myself as a reserve and realized I'm scared to death of handling a gun. So I couldn't do it. So I have such respect for law enforcement, for those of you that are comfortable with a badge, with a gun. I mean, we've done the, simulation village where I had to go into a domestic violence situation. I thought everything was calm, everything was cool. But in my scenario, the wife at the time, who was the victim, had a weapon in the couch cushion. And so went out to defend then her husband who was being arrested. And I'm like, ah, boy, that caught me off guard. Another time I had to pat down a suspect who we stopped at some kind of like a mock arrest. And I thought he was fine, too, and had a weapon in his sock that I didn't catch. So I realized, okay, maybe this is not for me because it was it's scary for those of you who are not adventure seekers. I'm not really, I'm wondering about the job itself. What you like about the job, because for me, I couldn't do it.
So as patrol officers, it's the adventure of every day is something new, is something different. You get exposed to so many different things. You get to meet so many different people. You interact with different communities. And I think it's for people who really are, they want to make a difference. They want to be a part. And obviously, you got to have a connection with people. And I think, for me, that's one thing that, I really appreciate about going out there and not knowing what the day is going to bring, but, being excited about what happens. As a matter of fact, this morning I got a phone call from a police officer that just got off probation. He just got assigned to Southwest area and got involved in a pursuit. And he kind of went through for me what the experience like was for him, because the pursuit turned into a foot pursuit. Mm. It turned into a chase by the canines. And just to hear his excitement, and this is a kid that I knew since he was 8 years old. And to see him to go from that little kid to actually make a difference in the community is very rewarding for me. And as it is for him, as it showed, in his testimony.
Well, see, I say thank God somebody's willing to run after a suspect, because you don't know what you're going to encounter. And that's why I feel like I have such respect for those willing to do that. Yeah? Do you want to respond?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Officer, thoughts about what you like about the job?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the captain said, every day is different. I think that's what drew me to the job. Like I said, going to law school just didn't seem appealing to me. I wanted something exciting. And the funny thing is, the first day of the right out of the academy, I started, graduated on Friday. Then that Sunday, you start patrol right away. And I remember sitting in the locker room thinking, gosh, can I do this? I'm meek, I'm mild.
And we do that, I think, in every career. Yeah. Can I do this?
Yeah. absolutely. Yeah. You know, is it going to be like the TV? Am I going to save the mayor's life? You know, what's it going to be like, right? And sure enough, first call, you know, shots fired, you know, victim down. So I show up and there's a guy shot, you know, so we call an RA and I was thinking in my head, oh my God, it is like the TV. You know, people are dying every day. And it was just, I mean, there I was trying to save, you know, save his life, call an RA, but I just felt, gosh, this is exactly what I had signed up
day
for.
Day one.
And so ever since then, it's been like that. And now in recruitment, it's even more rewarding because now I could help someone fulfill their dreams, you know, or, you know, get that excitement that they're looking for.
I'm thinking I'd hear shots fired. I'll be like, oh, I'll let you handle that. I'll let you go do that. Okay. Captain?
Yeah, you know,
Sergeant.
Sorry.
No worries.
Thanks for
promotion.
You're welcome.
One day.
In the money, too.
Sorry about that.
No, you know, it is. It is a great career, and it has been such a great ride for me. Like I said, 29 years later, I still get excited about just everything, about the things I've had the opportunity to see. And I'm nosy, so it's fun. And you're like, people wonder you to go in people's lives and just get to know the business. I used to say, being a cop, you get to know everything. You know, that line you drive by, you're like, I wonder what's going over there. Well, I get to walk over there and see what's going on. And so it's, you know, and then also just other kids, young kids seeing me. They go, God, look at that. Oh, hi, female, hi, black police officer. You know, just young black women seeing me in this uniform, seeing what I represent. It has just been, you know, I love wearing this uniform and I love being out in the public and I love for people to see that, you know, I did this and I'm no different from you. I just took a leap and I'm over here on the side of the table. I didn't always want to be a police officer. I didn't even know any police officers. And so, you know, it's just good being able to represent my community, where I come from. And, you know, even my friends are so proud of me and just being out there, just interacting with the public. I used to love being on radio calls, just, you know, just going out there, you know, just trying to figure things out for people and just being that person that is culturally aware of what's going on in my neighborhood. I still live in the city of Los Angeles, so I'm very aware of my surroundings, what's going on and what's going on with how people feel about us. And the same thing that concerns them concern me. You know, I'm concerned with just what's the environment, what's happening in our community, those same things, issues that affect the people in the city of Los Angeles. I live in the city of Los Angeles. It affects me as well. So, you know, it's been a great ride. I cannot say anything but great things about being a police officer.
So when you talk about the things that the community has concerns about, you know, and having a best friend who is an officer, and her story is one of those that made the news. I don't know if you recall when there was kind of like a shootout on the Santa Monica Pier. It was a 4th of July. Okay, so I'll just paint that picture quickly. Apparently there were some gang members wanted for a murder in another community, and they had been traced to Santa Monica, tracked to Santa Monica. So Santa Monica got the call. My friend was one of the officers who responded. They spotted these suspects who then grabbed hostages. And three officers, I believe it was three officers, two officers were shot and three innocent civilians. And she was one of them. So I think of what she has lived through. And I, you know, get perspective on law enforcement from somebody like that. So I would ask you all, what is it that you would want the public to know? What would you want to clarify about the job when you hear things from the public? Is there something you'd want to clarify about what it's really like for you on the job?
You know, if I can go back to what Sergeant Britt was talking about, is that the representation. I think a lot of times there is a perception that the city is not well represented from the different communities. And this is something that we work hard on to make sure that we represent the city. Actually, when it comes to our numbers, we are on parity when it comes to our African Americans, when it comes to our Asian Pacific Islanders. But we have a new chief that's been in office, and it's something that he's recognized that there is a history in the city with relationships, and he's working hard to develop the relationships, to improve the relationships. And we have a huge, huge, big hiring push. And when it comes to the hiring, we're working very hard to ensure that it is very diversity inclusive, and going in that direction to make it even better than the numbers that they are right now.
Would you say LA is more progressive when it comes to that, the number of Latino officers, African-American, other ethnicities compared to other cities?
Oh, I think that without a doubt, when you look at the efforts that's put behind what we do, that we definitely lead the nation when it comes to recruitment period, and especially in diversity areas. I mean, we get calls from agencies across the nation trying to figure out what it is that we do, and they end up following our model. So I definitely think that, you know, we are the leader in that area.
So Officer Adams, when you're doing recruitment efforts, give me a question that kind of tends to be like one of the regular questions that you tend to get.
Is it scary? You know, they typically want to know, is it scary?
And how do you answer that?
The great thing about LA and what we sell is that we're two-man cars. So you're always going to be working with a partner. And the training that we receive, the extensive training, we don't just send you guys out there, you know, send probationers out there just without any sort of training. It's an extensive six-month training, and we, you know, train you everything from just human relations, how to deal with people, shooting, tactics, everything. And then we stick you with a training officer for a full year. And then after that, then you partner up with another 10-year officer. So, you know, the percentage of officers that actually get in a shooting is very minimum. It's less than 10%, I would say. So is it scary? I mean, I say it's more exciting than scary. And again, you're always going to be working with a partner to back you up.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. Yeah. So not all agencies do the two-man car?
No. A lot of agencies, small agencies, they ride single car.
Most agencies have two-man cars.
Yeah. And the reasoning for LA would be?
It's just the commitment to the safety of the officer.
Oh.
Yeah, absolutely. That's just something that this department has decided, that it's something that's vital and it's something that's needed, and has made that commitment to ensure that our patrol cars, primarily, there are some exceptions to the rule. Like, we have some that may work traffic, or as a senior lead officer, you may ride by yourself. As a supervisor, you ride by yourself. But generally speaking, the patrol cars that respond to radio cars, there are what we call two-officer vehicles.
Okay. Sergeant, give me another question that you get at the recruitment events.
Oh, when we kind of covered this, do I have to do patrol? And so the thing about that is everyone starts in patrol, but once you do your probation and you get on your career path, there's so many avenues that you can take. And the good thing about the Los Angeles Police Department is that we are such a big organization that you can always promote. You can always go to a specialized division. We have 21 divisions now, right? 21. And so when I first came on, there was not 21. There was only 19. But now we have 21. With that being said, though, there's all these places. One of our divisions would be in another city, their whole agency. So with that being said, you can always move around. It's exciting. There's just so many different possibilities, whether it be you want to be a detective, or you want to be a sergeant. You want to have aspirations of being the next chief of police. You know, I had a partner in the car with me, and she always told me, I'm going to be the next chief. And right now she's on her way because she's a commander now, and we rode together. So I say that to say, whatever it is that you really want to do and you aspire to do, LAPD has something to offer you. And that's the beauty about this department, is so much diversity in jobs and careers that you can take different paths to become whatever it is that you aspire to be. And so that's what I love about it. And people don't realize that. You know, we have people that literally deal in computer crimes. We have detectives that deal in art theft. You know, and so, you know, here they get this training in actual art theft. You know, it's just, you know, there's so much, you know, homicide.
If I can add, you had made a reference about how good the sergeant looks. The one thing that you need to know about her is that she, on her off time, she's also is a personal trainer, right? But she has, once again, when I say what you love, you can do outside the department, you can do on the department. She is a lead person on our candidate advancement program, which is a workout program that we offer to people so that they can prepare and get in shape to get into the academy. And so this is huge, because a lot of people, they find that when they get to the academy, you know, some people work out on their own, they do their own thing, but they get there and they find out, whoa, this is whole.
They're not ready for
exactly
that program.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
And so if you want.
So, yeah, so not only do I get to recruit the officers, I get to inspire them at our workout program. So I touched them on several times throughout their process in the physical fitness aspect, and motivating and taking them out on runs and getting them physically ready. And then I'll see them I'll recruit them as well. So it's a great, and that's my passion. Fitness is my passion. So I get opportunity to come to work and get paid to work out and inspire people to get physically fit. So, you know, it's a great,
Wait, she gets paid overtime to work out.
I sure do.
Overtime.
Well, exactly.
And you were noting that the LAPD starts out with the officers on patrol.
Yes.
But I'm thinking the sheriff's department, they start working out
in the jails.
In the jails. Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's different.
Exactly. And a lot of times for them, they have to bid to get out to patrol. And then they actually go on probation once they come out of the jails. So that's a whole nother business. Mm-hmm. So we are unique in the fact that we do start in patrol. And like Officer Adams said, we are two-man cars. And we have LAPD is constantly training. That's one thing about our department. You hear some of the small agencies where they don't have money or budget to even train. We are constantly in training mode. We are given specialized training all the time. Our department is looking at different ways to do things to evolve and get better. Once a year, we have to all attend different courses to make sure that we are stay in our post and are mandated to keep our curriculum up. And so it's LAPD is progressive in, when it comes to that.
Well, I happened to be at the Academy a couple times for a segment we do called Wednesday's Child, which helps kids in foster care to get adopted. And your department hosted one of our girls. So we were there at the Academy and there was a class going through. And what surprised me every time I go now to the Academy is that I see people of all heights and ethnicities. I see, you know, there's not just one kind of make or model in this day and age. And that to me seems like a sign of the times that it's not all about necessarily brute strength. Am I right?
No, it's not. It's about diversity. And we appreciate that because we know that with diversity, it brings a better department. You know, everyone has something different to bring, a different perception of how they view things. And with those different viewpoints, it makes our department great.
So is there, and I'll ask you, Officer, is there a height restriction?
No height restriction. They took that out a long time ago.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. What about weight restriction? How does that work?
Oh, yeah, there's a weight. It has to be, you have to, 30% for women and what's it, 22 for men.
Is that?
Body fat.
Body fat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so let's say you want to be an officer. You might qualify in every other area, but maybe you don't meet the weight requirement. What do you recommend to someone?
Well, that's my program. That's what we
that's
offer.
Your program.
For free. So if you want to be a police officer and you take the test and you find that, and it's not only about the physical fitness, mind you, it's about the mental fitness as well. So if you're overweight or, you know, feel that you're not physically ready, the program is a free program that we offer 5 times a week. Even morning classes to get you physically as well as mentally prepared for the Academy. I've had people come into that program 70 pounds overweight.
Really?
Yes, 70 pounds overweight that are now police officers.
Okay.
And then I've had people come in underweight, meek.
Had to bulk up a little bit.
No command presence that we made that made sure that they were physically and built that command presence and now on the job. So it goes both ways.
Or could not get over that.
Or can't get over the wall. A lot of women struggle with upper body strength, and we have a 6-foot wall that's post-mandated and a fence that we have to get over. We practice that, make sure they're able to get over that. Just all those things we work on. So, and you know, if there's something I always tell the women, if you really want to do this, you can do it. You just got
to
want
to
do it.
How
bad do you want it? I always tell them, how bad do you want it?
And then what else do you test for, Officer?
So it's a 7-step hiring process that the candidates have to complete. It starts off with a written exam. It's 3 essay questions, nothing police related. It's all about your writing ability. Once they pass that, they move on to their background check. There's a polygraph, the physical test, an interview, just like they do with any other job. They have to interview for it. And then the medical and psychological evaluation. So once they complete that, then they're considered for the Academy class.
So what about background check? I know, you know, the laws with marijuana have completely changed since, you know, when I was a youngster. How does that work if...
So there are still standards as far as being a police officer. As a police officer, you are not allowed to... partake in marijuana. Mm-hmm. The department understands that society is changing, the rules are changing, the laws are changing. So it is something that when you go through this process, you can't do it. Period. Mm-hmm. You cannot. As something that, you know, we're not looking for perfection. We look for the whole person, and we understand that you know, people make mistakes in their lives and things happen. But when it comes to narcotics, that's something that, you know, is really a hard line on, and it's not looked upon very well.
And if you've ever had any prior run-ins with the law, say as a juvenile or as a young person, does that mean there's no chance?
Absolutely not. That doesn't mean it's not a chance. We look at the whole person. So the captain is the hiring authority, and he gets the opportunity to look at people as a whole. I mean, we know that people have, no one's perfect. No one's perfect. And there's going to be things that could come up, but as a whole, we're going to look at the whole person. What have you done now? What have you moved past that? What are you doing now? And so, you know, you might have had some bumps in the road as a juvenile and maybe as an adult as well. But what are you doing now? You know,
mm-hmm. What about military background? Because I think, you know, in the past, I think a lot of people from the military would become law enforcement.
Yeah, it's something that military is one of our bigger sources that we recruit from. We spend a lot of time at Camp Pendleton and also some of the other military installations. I think that we, even though that is one of our foundations, one of our base, we have also have moved much beyond that because we are looking for a lot more diversity. We're looking for women. Right now, we're probably at about a little bit over 18% women. We would very much like to get to 20 and beyond. We would love to be at 25, even beyond that. So these are some areas that we've been pushing hard to get at. I was just actually talking with the sergeant and the officer a little bit earlier today, and we're trying to strategize. What can we do? How can we get the message out? How can we expose more women to this police department and the opportunities that occur here?
Well, even being at the ABLE luncheon, I heard some officers speak, and even talking to Dion Joseph, who we interviewed for another podcast, some of the officers said they did it because the pay was good and they could support their families. Can you talk about what the pay is right now?
Yeah, absolutely. We're at $63,000, a little over $63,000 right now, and that's just starting salary. That's with a high school diploma. With minimum requirements of high school diploma, you have to be a U.S. citizen and at least 20 years old to apply. And after you graduate the six-month academy, then you get another step increase. Then you work your year probation, and then after that, then you get another increase. Now, if you have at least 60 units of college credit or an AA or military service, you'll get an additional step increase. So you'll be making around $74,000 after just a year and a half of being on the job. And I mean, I don't know any other job that's going to give you a $10,000 bonus or $10,000 raise within a year and a half. Full benefits, full medical, dental, first day of the academy. So we actually will pay you to go through our prestigious academy.
Uh-huh. Your full salary begins the day you enter the academy. So most of these academies, smaller agencies, candidates have to put themselves through an academy and then they get picked up. We actually, your starting salary and full benefits begin the day you enter our police academy.
So if you get accepted to the academy, that's considered, you're starting the job right there.
Yes.
Day one, you get paid. And it's not just the salary. I mean, the salary is great, but there are even more bonuses on top of that. There are shooting bonuses. There are post bonuses. There are a bunch of bonuses. But probably, you know, one of the biggest thing, and for a lot of people at the Gen Z age, probably don't really get and understand, but a great thing that we understand very much is our pension. You know, a lot of companies and organizations have moved beyond pension. But I always tell people it's going to be great to one day when the most difficult part of your day is waking up. And after that, all your bills are going to be paid for. That's something great to look toward. So,
And then not only pension, people don't realize like the bonding leave. LAPD has been very progressive. For women having babies, I took bonding leave in full pay, 7 months with each kid. A whole year with each kid.
You were off the job for a whole year?
With pay.
Really?
And
yes.
How much vacation time do you get?
How much? I get a month and 2 weeks, 6 weeks of vacation every year. With your first 10 years, you get a whole month. And after 10 years, you get 6 weeks. So you get a long vacation, which we call 30 days. And you get a short vacation, which is 2 weeks. And you put them anywhere within a year.
So how long does the average officer stay on the job? Do you have any figures like that?
About 30 years, right?
Wow.
Right?
I don't know.
You don't know what you think?
I mean, it's up there. I don't know exactly how long it is, but most officers, when they come on become a police officer, they end up, you know, seeing it through. And the longer you stay, the better the benefits become. Just as she mentioned, you know, you get longer vacations. We have, after you've done 10 years, you get longevity pay. You know, there's so many different benefits and reasons why to stay. And this has, I'm not even talking about what we were originally talking about was what you do for the community and what you give back and how you're able to serve. But along with that, it has great opportunities for you financially.
Do you have any personal thoughts, like when you hear criticism? I mean, cause, I mean, we get it too, being in the media, so I understand that. I mean, does it personally hurt you, or do you just feel like it just comes with, you know, the job, the pros and the cons of the job?
Well, so for me, which is kind of interesting, because I grew up in the city of Los Angeles, and so I probably experienced some of the things. I probably saw some of the things when it came to, you know, what it's like to be a minority in the inner city. And then I come on the job and I see some of the things from the other side. So it's kind of a unique position to be in, to kind of see both sides. And so sometimes, you know, when I try to talk to people and I try to get them to understand, you know, there's always more to the story than perhaps, you know, what is being told, you know, right then and there. So a lot of times when things occur nationally with police and people automatically want to get your opinion on them, say, well, let's wait. Let's hear it all so that we can make an informed determination as to what happened, as opposed to immediately jumping to a conclusion.
Officer, do you find you ever have to go home? I mean, I have to do this in the news and explain things that people are seeing in the news. I know I go, what happened to this? What about this? What about that?
Yeah. Like the captain said, there's always two sides to the story. And I'm always, you know, hey, we don't know. We can't Monday morning quarterback anything until we hear all the facts. So, yeah, a lot of times, even it's hard for me when I see something on the news or whatever. I'm quick to judge, too. Like, oh, man, he should have done that or shouldn't have done that. But then I realize, yes, there's always two sides. So I do have to explain a lot because, you know, being on this side, we see a different perspective than what, you know, the civilians see.
Yeah, Sergeant.
No, same thing. You know, growing up in the neighborhood, like the captain said, there was sometimes some things I didn't see that the police that I didn't particularly like, you know, but that never discouraged me from being a police officer, even though, you know, because I always thought from a different point of view, like when I get in there, I'm going to change that. Mm. You have to be that person that's going to bring change. Either we can sit here and talk about it, or you can try to change something from within, and you can't do it from the outside. And so, you know, I always say, oh, it's going to be great because I'm going to be there and I'm going to be able to understand, you know, what it's like. You know, I'm going to be able to relate to those young kids because I'm from that same neighborhood. And so that was my whole point of view when I thought about being a police officer, even in my community, you know, just coming back, you know, working Southeast, the same community that I grew up, I ended up working as a detective in. And so, you know, I was very familiar, you know, and so it was just interesting when I would come across people and they go, oh, you don't know. I'm like, yes, I do know. I grew up right down the street. As a matter of fact, I live not that far from here still. So I do understand what you're talking about. So it's interesting.
So I have a memory of working during the 92 civil unrest. And I remember being
me too.
Yeah, crying.
I was a field reporter. Me too. Yeah.
And I remember being at Parker Center, right? And the officers were lying in Parker Center, having to protect the building because, you know, people were they end up burning down the guard shack, and it was really wild. And I remember there was someone who was in my face and was telling me, "Oh, come on, brother, put your badge down. Put your badge down. Come on this side." And you know, and I'm thinking, what sense does that make? You know, because tomorrow, you know, you go back to your life and tomorrow I'm out of a job, but neither one of us has made a change. I really believe, as, you know, the sergeant mentioned, is that change can only occur from the inside, right? And we need to have more influence on what happens by becoming a part to make those changes. We've had some people that have gone up in rank in this department, as she mentioned, you know, a partner of hers who became commander. You know, I've had partners that have become chief of police, so on and so forth. And that's the only way that change occurs, is by being a part of it, not from the outside.
Well, what I want to do is bring in my next two guests in just a moment. I'm going to let you all give a final thought. And as we're kind of starting to make a transition here for a second, my one story about the, you call it civil unrest, also people know it as the LA riots. One day I was out covering, the Korean community had stores that had been looted. So we were doing a live shot in the middle of the day. And I turn around, we were wrapping up the live shot, and there's a tug of war for our camera. So somebody was trying to steal our news camera. And literally, it was like, you know, back and forth, like a comedy routine, back and forth with the camera. And an LAPD car comes flying around the corner, pulls up, and the suspect ran. What they thought they would do with a news camera, I have no idea. But I was never so grateful to see an LAPD car come up, but at that moment there. So we have a lot of stories, obviously. I want to give you a moment to give us a final thought. You three are in recruitment, so if you want to wrap it up with something on that or a personal story or whatever you'd like to leave our audience with, I'm just grateful to hear from you. So who wants to go first?
Well, you know, the let me just say this.
Sergeant, yes.
This is one of the most amazing jobs that careers that if it's something that you've thought about doing, that you should take a leap and try, because it is very rewarding. And I must say, 29 years, I still get excited about the things that I got excited when I first came on the job. And it has just been amazing, some of the things I've got to experience, some of the people I've come in contact with, and being able to change lives. So not only in recruitment, but I've been in stories where, you know, when I worked the prostitution and vice detail, where, and I'm going to give you this quick story, where a woman was on the streets, and I used to always talk to her, like, why are you out here? Like, you know, you don't have to be out here. And, but I would always be kind. I would treat people with respect. You just never know the circumstances. And so I get a letter, you know, one day thanking me, you know, to the station about, hey, I turned my life around. I'm going to take it a step further.
Wow.
I'm teaching my boot camp class. This woman doesn't know who I am, how to get. And this woman shows up to my class. It's the same woman from 15 years ago when I worked vice.
Out of the blue.
Out of the blue.
Shows up just to take an exercise class.
Yes. And then she comes to me and tells me she had got her master's degree, went on to do big things in her life. And she just once again, like, oh, my God, I'll never forget you. And so you never know how you touch people's lives.
That's a powerful story.
Yes, exactly. So amazing. Amazing.
I like that. Yeah. All right. Not that you have to top that, officer, but that was a good one.
No story for me. Yeah, no. I just want to reiterate that, you know, if you're somewhat even remotely interested in this job, now is the time to apply and to start. We're hiring. We have a seminar June 15th. If you're, you know, somewhat interested, go to our website, join LAPD, and learn about this career and just apply.
In case this airs after June 15th, how often do you have those seminars?
We have a seminar every month. So if you just go to our website, joinlapd.com, and we'll post there once a month. We have a seminar, but we also test every day, pretty much throughout Southern California. So there's going to be a test somewhere locally to you. So just go to our website and check out the testing location.
And the seminar is just kind of informative, just to kind of put your toe in the water kind
yes.
of thing?
Yes. So for the seminars, we will provide a information session, and then we will administer the written exam, which is the first step in the hiring process, and also administer the physical test. So you get to knock out 2 out of the 7 steps all in one day. So that's the perk of the seminars. Otherwise, you can just go to our website and check out the testing locations and take the written exam anywhere. And all you have to do is just show up with a valid photo ID.
Okay, so Captain, you stay here on the mic. I'm going to let Officer Roseanne Adams and Sergeant Cassandra Britt Nickerson stand down for a moment. Thank you so much. If you want to step out, you may. If you want to take the chairs in the back, you may. All right, so I'm going to have my next two guests introduce themselves. Go ahead,
Keith. Okay, I'm Sergeant Keith Mott with the Los Angeles Police Department. I've been a member of the police department for 11 and a half years.
Okay, and we know each other through the program that I love, Bigs in Blue.
Yes.
Yes, and I saw you on the news.
That's correct.
And I love that program.
Thank you.
So go ahead and describe what it is.
Well, the program, it's a partnership that Los Angeles Police Department has with Big Brothers Big Sisters. The program is called Bigs in Blue. Mm-hmm. Bigs in Blue has been rolled out throughout the country. There are other cities that are actually mimicking what we're doing here, Dallas being one.
Are we the first?
I think we are the first.
We're right up there.
I think the big rollout was with us. They had some small agencies, but the big rollout actually started with the Los Angeles Police Department. And I know Dallas just did theirs a few months ago, because I have some fraternity brothers who were in Dallas and contacted me. Hey, man, isn't it what you guys are doing in Los Angeles and how you guys are doing it? Because this is what they're doing down in Dallas.
And I think everybody listening knows the Big Brothers Big Sisters program. It's basically an adult kind of is assigned to a young person, and you're kind of that mentor, that friend,
yes.
that buddy.
But what makes this one unique is officers assigned to kids in South L.A., one-on-one.
It's just just South L.A.?
The focus behind it became South L.A. because the Big Brothers Big Sisters throughout the city of Los Angeles, South L.A. is the one where you have more kids and not enough mentors. All the other areas had too many mentors, but not enough kids. But in South LA, there were like 200 kids on the program and only 30, 40 mentors.
Okay, so you're considered a big.
That's correct.
And DJ, you're considered a little, but right, this doesn't sound right, right? You're just too old to be considered a little.
Height-wise, yeah, it is.
No. Okay, go ahead and introduce yourself.
My name is DJ Linares. My friends call me DJ. Mm-hmm. I am an activist. I advocate for the African-American community. I participate in many conventions that dissect the problems in African-American community. And I'm also going to be in a documentary about gang violence and gang culture in Los Angeles.
We got a lot to talk about. Okay, so how old are you?
I'm only 17.
Only? That's pretty good. All right, senior in high school?
Yes.
So you'll be out of school soon. And yes. I hear big things are happening for you.
As far as school-wise, yes. I go to a charter school, and I'm the first ever BSU president. Like, we're the first ever BSU in charter school history, and I'm the president of the BSU.
BSU is?
The Black Student Union.
And you're the president?
Yes.
See, you're always so quiet when I see you. I had no idea. Well, I'm glad you're here, because I believe that you can soak up this conversation. And might have been a long conversation for you to have to sit and listen to. But I'm so grateful you're here. And Captain, wouldn't you agree with me that for the young people just to be exposed to adults talking about their dreams and their hopes and their fears and their contribution is important?
Yeah, absolutely. I've worked with Sergeant Mott on a couple of programs, so we're trying to get more kids involved in LAPD and things we have going on. So DJ is a perfect example of what we're going towards.
Okay, so Sergeant, you started in the LAPD. Are you LA born and raised?
No, I'm not. I'm actually born in Washington, D.C., raised Gary, Indiana.
Well, how'd you get out here?
Well, the funny part is my dad used to be a police officer for Washington, D.C., and had an uncle who was a police officer in New York. But my parents never wanted any of us, my brother and sister, to go into law enforcement.
Oh, you're so defiant.
So they were grooming me to be a lawyer.
Okay.
I actually worked for the Supreme Court of the United States as a federal police officer. Associate Justice Thomas, Associate Justice Kennedy, and Associate Justice Scalia were actually grooming me for law school. And they were going to get me into Georgetown. But I still had this inclination to do something for the community. I work with a lot of young kids because through our family, our family's been involved in a lot of volunteer programs. In Fairfax County, Virginia, there's actually a community center named after my aunt and uncle called the Mott Community Center for all their civil work they've done within the community with young folks. I pledged a fraternity in college, Alpha Alpha Fraternity. Our focus is working with the communities, young people in community mentoring. So it's something that's always been in my blood. And I remember telling Justice Thomas one day, I'm going to Los Angeles. Nobody knew that I actually applied to LAPD. My father was not really happy. My mom cried. But the mm-hmm. bottom line was, hey, you're a grown man. You know, you have to make your decisions. And even when I applied to LAPD, I tell people the only two jobs in my life I actually applied for on my own. Supreme Court was one and the LAPD was the other because my dad was kind of really connected. So it was a great accomplishment when I joined LAPD. And I could have gone the route and joined Washington, D.C. with my dad still had connections. But to be on LAPD and accomplish things I accomplished, you know, it's like a pat on the back for me to say, this is what I accomplished on my own. Not where somebody knew somebody, but my merits actually were my rewards. The biggest rewards for LAPD was what I really joined for, and that was for people like DJ to try to make a difference in a young child's life where he can make a decision to not get involved in something that's going to get him killed, but make him something better in the community and also something better in the United States as a citizen.
Mm-hmm. And DJ, do you want to be a law enforcement officer? And maybe it doesn't matter with the Bigs in Blue that it's just a mentoring program in general.
I can see myself being a law enforcement officer. It's just what's really big on me is just the criticism like that goes on in my community. You know?
Okay, tell me more.
Like, every time I get seen with Keith, my friends try to crack jokes, you know?
Like, so you're this high schooler seen with an LAPD officer in full uniform?
Yeah, because in my community, we really not supposed to like the police, you know, because the media, the display of the media of the police officers. So,
are you blaming the media? You're going to come into Olympic and Bunny and blame the media. It's okay.
But me, like, I never been a follower. I decided to let my own mind and, you know, let him view him as a person first, then what is shown to me, you know?
Sounds and like a dynamic person just from the last sound we heard from him. Yeah.
I also want to break the barriers between the African-American community and police officers.
Look at this dynamic young man. Now, Captain, had you two met much before? Did you know his story much?
No, this is my first time getting a chance to engage with DJ, and I am so impressed because, you know, what he is saying is the message that, you know, I try to put out there on my side, and is really encouraging to hear someone who's from the city, someone at his age, and can see that there is opportunity to connect with police officers.
Okay, so DJ was at the ABLE luncheon that we were at, but you know it's a tight program, so you only get to say so much. I feel like I'm learning so much about you being here. Where did this come from, this concern for community and bridging this gap with law enforcement?
Growing up, I always kind of felt like I was different due to my priorities in life and what I wanted to do in life. A lot of my peers, we idolize the wrong things. We idolize gang violence and fashion and a bunch of other stuff. But me, I just really want to change the world. If you ask me at any age, whether I was 7 or 16, I always said I'm going to change the world. And I realized that the biggest factor we need is unity and an alliance to become one.
Where did DJ, you like broke out of his shell? I mean, from the past, I've met you like 3 times. Okay, so.
DJ, you know, DJ really has grown into his own. When I met DJ 3 years ago, very silent. You know, like he said, his environment is not really an environment of learning. But in our interactions, you know, he was very silent. So for a while, I thought maybe I wasn't getting through to him. And I even told the Big Brothers Big Sisters, like, maybe I'm not, you know, a perfect match. And it was during the Biggs Gala when they asked DJ to speak, and they asked him, how's your relationship with a police officer? And DJ stood up and said how just being associated with me has really helped him understand things, has made him look at himself and say, you know, oh, I can graduate from high school. Because nobody ever asked him about his grades. And, you know, to me, I just took it for granted every time I talk. How are you doing in school? How are you doing in school? He said it meant a lot to him. Then he talked about how just me taking him play pool meant a lot to him. Me taking him out on a boat meant a lot to him. Me taking him to, and that's when I started realizing, even though we weren't having a lot of conversation, but just exposing him to something that's different from his neighborhood meant a lot to him. And it made him start realizing, hey, I can see myself beyond my neighborhood.
Right. Well, I'm thinking, you know, at this luncheon, it brings back memories for me when I first became a young reporter. I'd never been, let's say, to a gala before. So I didn't know, which fork do you use? Is that your water glass or my water glass? Is that your bread plate? So, I mean, that was like foreign territory for me. And I had a mentor take me. She's a woman who'd run for Congress, and she'd written books on women's finance. But just her taking me along really exposed me and kind of helped me get into a comfort zone where now I can go to any kind of banquet or lunch and it's no problem. So how did you first meet? How was the pairing for you two?
Well, the way the pairing, what Biggs does is any individual who wants to become a mentor, they evaluate you. There are like 100 questions that are asked. And what they're trying to find is what type of child to match you with.
Okay.
And they do ask, you know, do you want a child who has a physical disability? Do you want a child? So they ask all these questions, and then they pair you with a child. And it was interesting when they paired me with DJ, the concerns I had was his safety, me being a police officer and from the neighborhood. I was very familiar with his neighborhood. The Rolling 60s gang is a very big gang, and they've always had issues with LAPD. So my concern was his safety. So they actually talked to him about it, and he said, I don't have a problem with it. So that was the first thing I realized, like, wow, this kid does not have a problem with this from that neighborhood. And that's how we ended up getting paired up.
And so, DJ, how'd you even hear about the program?
My mom, like, growing up, I never had a male figure in my life or a male role model. My mama, she's a single parent, so she was always trying to find a male role model for me. So she found the Big Brothers Big Sister program. And then, yeah.
So it didn't have to be with a police officer?
Nah.
It could have been somebody, a teacher. It could have been a car salesman. It could be anybody.
I feel like it was on purpose. It was a plan.
Mm-hmm. Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have a little brother.
Mm-hmm. You know, when he says it's a plan, it's I pray every day. And I wondered about this of our match, okay? And I asked God, why did you match me with this young man? And as you see him evolve, I realized the match was, like he says, that the community itself and law enforcement, he's a living example. Tell him, he said it in Fox and Evan News when we did the thing with Phil Schumann.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Sergeant Modest is like the rest of us. He cares. He just happens to be a police officer. And he's not like the police officers we see on TV. You know, I remember when he made that statement, and that said a lot to me, because then it said, just me being the person I am, and, you know, associating with him is letting people know, law enforcement officers are not how people are making us out to be. We care about the community. We care about the people we serve. When on the side of the vehicle says, protect and serve, this is an example of protect and serve. We are serving our community in other ways. We're not just out always arresting folks. We care about our young people. We care about the places we patrol. We care about the people we see, you know, every day when we're out on the street.
Captain, let me ask you, when you're doing recruitment, I mean, because you're recruiting from all communities, are you finding that in the recruitment rooms that people are saying, you know, look, from my neighborhood, I'm not supposed to be an officer? Do you see that much?
You know, as I mentioned earlier, we are working very hard to recruit from the inner city areas, and it is very tough. And it's because of, you know, the history between what happened with LAPD and the inner city. I can tell you with my time on the job that, you know, it's not perfect, but it is not what it was before, nowhere near. And again, it's very encouraging to know that they're, you know, it's encouraging for us because we're out there and we're trying to get people to see. We do run across people that feel like, no, I don't want to be affiliated with the police department. And to know that we have opportunities like that's very helpful to help us to do what we do.
So, Sergeant Mott, do you have children of your own?
I do. I have a son. He's 25. He lives in Louisiana.
Okay.
And I have grandkids, and I have a third grandchild on the way.
Oh, congratulations.
And I always tell him, I say, you know, I don't get down enough to see you or the grandkids.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm a family man.
Okay. And so how often do you two connect?
My son and I? Or DJ?
Your other son, DJ.
Your
LA son.
We connect as much as we can. I know this last year, being in his senior year, we haven't connected as much on a one-on-one. I do call, check on him, but we haven't connected as much. But I have been staying on him a lot because trying to get him into college. And that's another step there in itself.
How are we doing with that, DJ? We're here. We are here to support you. Thinking about it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to study?
African American studies.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to do with that?
My plan in life is to change the world. I want to educate black people. Mm-hmm. I'm starting off with black people because I feel like we got to change ourselves before we change anybody else. So then it's going to branch out to other races.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the things you two have had done together in the past.
Keith is the first person to teach me how to play pool.
Oh, you're allowed to call him Keith?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He got another name, Mr. Clean.
Mr. Clean. Oh, okay. I'm going to call him Sergeant, but you call him Keith.
He's the first person to teach me how to play pool, the first person that's taken me on a boat.
That's fun.
What else have we done? Oh, we went to Mulligan's. We had fun there.
That's the games and food and stuff?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We've done a lot, yeah.
We have done a lot. I talked to him to see, you know, what is it he hasn't done and try to expose him to that, even just driving up the coast. 4th of July last year, his brother and I had taken him to a college classmate of mine's house in Oceanside. Very pretty house, fine. Off on a golf course. I have to say, him and his wife actually called me and asked me to bring them down. And the whole thing was just exposing him to that environment. But it was an interesting question. And his brother had asked my friend, he says, hey, did you play football? Now, my buddy is a graduate of Morehouse, and he used to be a vice president of human resources for Amgen. You know, so sports was not his thing. So he thought that was an interesting question. But and this is what we talk about of exposing our young kids. Like you say, on TV, you know, we put basketball players, football players, we bring sports program, and it's almost like we tell the kids, hey, if you're not an athlete, you're not successful. Here they're seeing an individual who had gone to college, Him and his wife had gone to college, educated themselves, you know, and worked their ranks up through corporate America. And they're living a life as comfortable as a football player. So just because you don't play sports does not mean you can't live a comfortable life. So this was like, you know, that exposure to them to realize, hey, I don't have to be an athlete or a rapper. I can be an educated person and still live a life as if I was a football player or a basketball player.
Mm-hmm. And Captain, don't you find that, because I see this more with law enforcement, that you're trying to do some more work in the community so that initial encounter with law enforcement isn't an arrest or a bad experience. It's meeting an officer in a positive scenario. Are you doing part of some of those activities?
You know, that's something that we do every day. You know, a lot of times when something happens naturally, of course, you know, people question us and you know, want us to respond to that. But I always challenge people. I said, name me 10 major incidents you can think of. And, you know, they go to these ones. And I said, no, I'll start off. Okay, Rodney King, Ferguson, and okay, you go from there. And they may be able to name 1, 2, 3 more, but don't get very far. But what they really don't recognize many times is that officers have millions of contacts that are positive. That I've seen, you know, as a watch commander working 77th Division, I've seen where officers have gone into their own pocket to buy baby food, to help. I've seen where officers have provided housing for my own officers here. When we get recruits that come from out of state and they come here and they have nowhere to go and they're sleeping on the front porch of the building just so they can come take the test, they've actually taken them and provided them with motel, hotel rooms and things like that. So the things that officers do, and you don't hear about it because they don't look for the recognition. They don't look for someone to pat them on the back. It's just who they are and it's just what they do. But those type of things don't get the type of attention that, you know, when something negative, that one negative that happens to the hundreds of thousands of positive things that happen every day.
So, DJ, does Sergeant Mott pull up in his police car to your house?
Nah.
Oh, okay. So this is civilian clothes and off-duty kind of thing?
Basically, yes. That's really the Bigs and Blue program for Big Brothers, Big Sisters. It is more off-duty. Now, we do have an MOU with Big Brothers and Big Sisters, which allows me to attend functions at his school or his home if it's while I'm on duty to give me that leeway. And I have shown up, you know, at his school to talk to his counselor, the teachers on duty, sometimes without him knowing, just to kind of follow up and see what's going on. But a lot of it is the dedication on the officer because it is a lot of stuff you do off duty on your own time.
Wow. And how long have you two been working together?
3 years. 3 years.
A long time.
Yeah.
So you feel like you know him?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's my guy.
DJ reminds me of my dad, and my dad was always referred to as a silent warrior. You know, they do a lot of things, they make things happen, but you don't know because it's not about them, it's about the work.
Wow, how so?
You know, and you know, as he's saying, as he's becoming an activist, we've talked about things like that. Now, what I did learn about him was I didn't know he knew Nipsey Hussle and his association in Nipsey Hussle. So during that discussion, that's when I discovered part of his wanting to be a rapper had something to do with Nipsey, but part of him wanting to change the community was because what he saw in the community, and he was like, you know, things can be better. Our relationship, when we talk about it, and I think the more he started learning about me, he started to realize, you know, police officers are human, but what can I do also as a non-police officer to make things better in my community?
I just did a podcast on Nipsey Hussle. Just did one. How did you know him?
I feel like everybody in the community knew him because he used to walk around selling his CDs, but my family knew him personally. But I don't like to brag or boast about it because it's not a competition, you know? It's just about loving a person. But I even rapped with him, his brother. People used to think he was my dad at some point in time. Like, really? Even my friends, they'd be like, you remind me of Nipsey Hussle, like.
Mm.
And I'd be like, thank you.
I had done a backpack giveaway with him and rapper YG, and I just remember feeling like looking out, seeing happy faces, and kids are getting a backpack to go back to school. I thought, okay, well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Okay, so we should note that you are also a rapper.
Yeah.
Yes. And what message do you want to put out in your music?
I really want to say, like, because I feel like we idolize gangster music, you know, in my community. And I feel like you don't have to be a gangbanger or none of that to get respect or, like, be idolized, you know? And I also want to promote, like, follow your dreams. Don't listen to the criticism, because you're going to get judged either way what you do, honestly. Just be you. And I feel like if you see the problem happening and you're not doing it, then you're a part of the problem too.
Mm-hmm. So if people want to be part of the Bigs in Blue, I mean, how many officers are doing it?
20 officers, my recall, have joined when the program started. Now, to be part of Big Brothers Big Sisters, you don't have to be a law enforcement officer.
Sure.
This was a unique partnership because it did have an MOU involved. Chief Beck signed an MOU.
What's MOU?
Mutual understanding, mutual agreement understanding. Oh. So it allowed us to have a partnership to where even on duty, we could still do our Big Brothers Big Sisters duties on duty, where most citizens who would join Big Brothers Big Sisters is something they would just do on their own. So this unique partnership allowed LAPD and Big Brothers to work together, allowed officers to be involved. So either if an officer wanted to go up on the school, say, just go by the house and it's quiet on their radio, they're not answering calls, hey, let me go stop by. It gave them that leeway to do that and not just say, well, the only time I can see him is when I'm off duty. No, you can see him 7 days a week if that's what it's going to take to build that relationship.
Well, we are going to wrap up our podcast soon. So, DJ, do you want to give us a little something? I think you should.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay. This is your big moment here at Olympic and Bundy.
All right.
Okay.
I'm asking myself, will there be better days? All I feel is pain. All I feel is pain. I ain't been the same. I ain't been the same. Thoughts up in my brain. Thoughts up in my brain. I'm a product of my environment. To make it in these streets, you gotta meet certain requirements. Everybody trying to preach, but no, I ain't buying it. Just don't get caught up in these streets, they're gonna try to tie you in. We fighting depression, and it's winning. Every time I get it right, I forget something is missing. I say I'm God sent, they say I'm steady sinning. They say I'm a project, but I say I'm a God descendant. I'm prolific, self-driven, God sending, mercy giving. I'm too vicious, west side gifted, no kidding. I know you feel it when I spit it, I'm killing. I'm fighting all my problems with my chin up. Nobody wanna listen, so honestly, it just builds up. Trying to run to my goals, but honestly, I just feel stuck. I'm trying to run to my goals, but honestly, I just feel stuck. Because when I see black excellence, soon to be black presidents, we trapped under depression and violence is our medicine. So we pick up weapons to relieve us from our stressing. Please count your blessings. Please listen to this message. Yeah.
Wow. When I saw you on Fox 11 News, I thought it touched my heart and my soul. It felt so deep to me. Sergeant Mott, when you hear him with his message, what do you think?
You know, it's refreshing and a blessing, because this job is what allowed me to be connected to him. This job allowed me to do what I came out here to do, and was to try to make a difference in the community. That connection that we had, he's an example of the difference that officers try to do in the community. You know, and that's, yeah, just listening to him and just seeing this, it lets me know, hey, what I'm doing is right. What I'm doing for the department is what the department is about. You know, this is what we're about, is making difference in the community.
And what is your rap name?
It's just called Better Days, because, like...
That's your rapper name?
Oh, my rapper name?
Yeah.
Almighty CNS stands for Almighty Crenshaw Slauson. I'm never going to forget where I came from.
Okay. And Captain, I would love to just get your words of wisdom for a young man like DJ, whether he, you know, gets into law enforcement or not, or does something else on the planet. What kind of words of wisdom as a man would you give him?
Well, I can just say that I am so impressed with DJ, and also with Sergeant Mott, what Sergeant Mott has done with him. I mean, it's so good to see this occur. As a police officer, you know, as a captain, I have an opportunity to see this happen many, many times. But to see the close relationship they develop, it's amazing. DJ, I hope that you continue on in the path that you're on, because you're definitely going in the right direction. One of the things when I talk about in recruitment, I work very hard to get African-Americans on this job. And we're looking for, you know, kids like you. And you know, the thing is that right now, you're on a great path. You're at that age right now where a lot of things are going to happen. A lot of things are going to come your direction. So it's going to be important for you to remain in the direction that you are headed right now. And then you're going to be able to do, you know, whatever you want. And you got support from Sergeant Mott. You got support from me, and you got support from the police department. So, you know, keep it going.
And Sergeant Mott, what would you want to have him know about life as he's 17 years old? The next chapter.
Just let him know, you know, life is not easy, but if you just got to keep focused and keep pushing forward, you know, almost like his rap was saying, you know, they're going to be hard days, but you can make those better days if you just keep pushing forward, keep looking forward. I'm a big Christian person. I do believe you lay it at the altar, you leave it at the door, you know, leave it in God's hands. God will make the way. No matter how rough the way would be, no matter how hard it is, you got to leave it in his hands and let him make the way.
Mm-hmm. I guess my little words of advice would be to continue to surround yourself around empowering people and uplifting people. That I feel like I have like 5 mentors myself, and they each kind of fill a different, you know, set of eyes and ears for me. But just keep, you know, touching base with those people, especially when you have a tough time, because we all have them. We've all been there, kind of thing. And it's exciting that you're 17. You know, I feel like you're our future, so we're handing the baton to you to continue to uplift our community.
Yeah, that's what it really is. It's really the youth who's really in control. We just don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I need to rest soon. At some point, I need to rest. So we need you up there. Okay, thank you so much for taking time for coming down to Olympic and Bundy and just sharing perspective on the LAPD. I don't get a chance to do this much, and I'm really very grateful for you sharing perspective.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate the opportunity for letting us share, and then also to connect with someone like DJ.
Thank you.